It's time for Open Journal's Community Spotlight, where listeners like you produce your own programs. This airtime is a free service offered to those interested in sharing their knowledge, talent, and passions. This is also a space to audition new programming. Opinions expressed in Open Journal may not reflect the views of the Pacifica Foundation, its staff, board, or volunteers. Information shared on Open Journal should not take the place of appropriate professional consultation. Now it's time for Open Journal's Community Spotlight here on KPFT Houston.
Good morning and welcome to Storytime on KPFT's Open Journal. I'm your host, Dr. Hank Rubicek, Professor of Communication Studies at the University of Houston downtown. You know, one of the many things that I've learned while hosting Storytime is that the range of stories is seemingly endless. Personal narratives test the boundaries of the human spirit, while fables and legends teach us about customs, traditions, and homespun values that keep us, well, human. Fairy tales take us on magical journeys to places imagined in our hearts and very real in our minds. And when one storyteller has the range to tell any type of tale, well, that's more than special. That's extraordinary and rare. But luck is with us today because such a storyteller has joined us this morning. Award-winning children's author Joe Harper has been on Storytime before, and it's been a treat. Teresa's Journey and Jalapena Hal are popular favorites among her fans. She received the Western Heritage Wrangler Award for Delfino's Journey. The Birth of the Fifth Son was the outstanding juvenile book in 2001. And Finding Daddy, a story of the Great Depression, yielded the Golden Spur Certificate from the Texas Reading Association, all of which represent an extremely short list on Joe's longer-than-life resume. Her most recent book, Mirror Men, and co-authored by her daughter Josephine, published by Aiken Press, takes a mild detour from her usual juvenile tone, satisfying the taste of teens and adults alike. And true to her roots, she stays with Texas and Mexico, her geographic favorites for story backdrop, and tells about the expedition in a rich historical narrative form. Joe, Mirror Men is about the Mirror Expedition, the most disastrous of all the border confrontations between Texas and Mexico during the days of the Republic. Tell us a little bit about what drove you to write this fascinating story.
Well, some years ago, I wrote a little biography for third or fourth grade about a very colorful Texan, Bigfoot Wallace. And I love to read Texas history. And as I was reading more about him, and of course I wanted to read about this famous expedition, I bumped into a character named John Christopher Columbus Hill. And I wanted to learn more about him. He was just 13 years old, but I couldn't tell his whole biography because there were so many holes in it. So I created this book about the colorful men on the Mirror Expedition. And that's the reason.
Yeah, the notion is that when we think about the Mirror Expedition, it's really all about history. You know, it's all about history. But tell us a little bit more about one of these colorful characters, for example.
Well, I'm interested in talking to you about John C.C. Hill.
Do.
But, you know, this takes place in, begins in 1842, and Texas just got its independence in 1836, so we were a very raw republic at that time. And Sam Maverick and other dignitaries were captured in San Antonio by a Mexican army, and they were going to be taken back to Mexico. Well, of course, we had no army. We didn't even have many Texas Rangers. So they sent out a runner to gather volunteers. And this runner went to a farm near LaGrange, the Hill Farm. And this Asa Hill was the father of a big family of boys. There were 11 boys, plus an adopted Mexican boy that they had saved at the Battle of San Jacinto, and he wanted to go with them. Well, it was harvest time, and everyone was needed. But Asa sat at the head of the table and looked down the line at all his boys and tried to think who he should send. And he said, well, Jeffrey Barksdale is the only one who hasn't yet fought for Texas. So he will go, and I will go fight again, despite his years. And little John C.C., who was 13, very handsome and small for his age, jumped to his feet and said, I want to go. I have to take care of my father and brother. And before the mother could intervene, the son who had fought at San Jacinto, James Monroe Hill, went to the wall and took down the gun that he had used in that battle and presented it to the boy and said, never let it fall into Mexican hands. And John C.C. said, no Mexican will ever shoot this gun.
Wow. History is obviously an integral part of storytelling, Joe. And I'm fascinated by this because sometimes when people think about history, they think about data. They think about things that are cross-checked. They think about things that are absolutely, totally objectified. And when you merge that with storytelling, and, you know, storytellers amplify things, right? But the mere expedition and mere men in your book, this is really historically accurate. So the stories that you tell are not necessarily amplifications of characters. These are real historical episodes.
I don't amplify. I cannot say that everything is the accurate truth, mm-hmm. because these men wrote the personal experiences, and of course they may have glorified, exaggerated, right. But every quotation I have...
And I want you to talk a little bit more about these characters, and even if you'd like to even read a little bit from the book, because I have it here. The book is hot off the press, and you are listening to Storytime, The Mere Expedition, with storyteller Joe Harper on KPFT's Open Journal. I'm your host, Dr. Hank Rubicek, and, Joe, we were just talking a little bit about history and about storytelling and how they are inextricably related to each other, and how you can have history without any kind of amplification and yet it still makes it fascinating. And the kind of documentation that you have is fascinating in and of itself. I was just skimming a few pages as you were going through that story. You want to pick it up a little bit from that last colorful character? Because I think that really is a great example of how the book is centered, what the book actually discusses. Characters like this.
Well, the men gathered at LaGrange under what they call the Buster Oak, which still stands there, although it's pretty old and scraggly by now.
Mm-hmm.
And then they camped outside San Antonio and finally got their men together and made this terrible long trip to the border to Ciudad Mier. Now, it was there that they had their first battle against the Mexican army. And this was urban warfare. They were in the buildings that looked down on the patio square. The young teenagers, there were several young teenagers, but they were all older than John C.C., but you can imagine that their keen eyes and good reflexes made them excellent shots, and they called them the fire eaters. They were given the job of picking off the cannoneers, and they were incredible fighters. But ultimately, the Texans surrendered, and they had to go down into the patio and give up their arms. John C.C. was the last one to go down and the last one to be called on, and he remembered that he had told his brother that the gun would never fall into Mexican hands. So he raised it in the air and smashed it on the patio stones.
Wow.
And General Ampudia was looking out the window watching the surrender of arms. And rather than be irritated, he was charmed by the little fellow's bravado and had him brought up to him. And, he said, don't they have enough men to fight in Texas? And John C.C. was offended. He said, I'm 13 years old. I'm a man. And Pudio said, oh, excuse me, this is a manly age.
Right.
And they bonded. And he had the other young teenagers brought up and gave them more gentle care than the men that were down in the barracks. And while this was happening and while he was being so kind to them, his own son, a 25-year-old boy, was lying on a pallet in his death throes, shot through the kidney. The flower of Mexican youth, a graduate of Chapultepec. Pudilla's heart was breaking, but he bore up and he took John C.C. in. He loved him so much that he quasi-adopted him and took him to Matamoros and enrolled him in school.
Wow. No kidding. Yeah, our listeners can't watch you, obviously, but you're really letting the story unfold as you see it. It's fascinating.
I still love the story. Now, he was there in school, settled into Ampudia's family, and Ampudia was so proud of him that in one of his communications, he mentioned him to Santa Ana, and Santa Ana said, send the boy to me.
Wow.
So Ampudia had to lose a second son, and he got him a good horse, and he had people go with him because it was very dangerous, robbers and so on. So he went to Mexico City, and by gosh, he was adopted by Santa Ana.
No kidding.
And he said...
And he was 13 years old?
13 years old.
Okay.
And he said, I can't... agree to that. I have loving parents. You'll have to talk to my father. So when Asa arrived in chains, having walked all the way, they had a conference, and he wisely realized that it was an opportunity for John C.C. and said, well, I don't want him to change his religion. I don't want him to lose contact with his family. But here he can have a great education, and he did. He became an engineer. He served as a kind of diplomat without portfolio and actually saved Chapultepec during the Mexican-American War when he persuaded the soldiers not to destroy it.
That's fair. You know, none of this is really taught in Texas history, is it, Joe? I mean, really. I haven't seen a Texas history text recently, but I can't believe any of this is really taught. This is all new.
It seems, you know, it's been popular, but you're right. It isn't something they actually teach, and it's very appealing, I think, especially to boys.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of messages in this book, and I know that you were sharing some of them with me earlier, and you had written some of them to me, and I wanted us to talk a little bit about that later in terms of what exactly does this book mean? What exactly does it say about the human condition? You know, you're talking about these wonderful narratives from very real historical characters, and it occurred to me that we have these episodes in our lives. If we documented them, how historical all of our lives can truly be. We don't know how significant they can be, really. But this is an excellent example of how documenting life can be so critical. But this is fascinating to me because it is so unbelievably new. 13 years old.
Yeah.
Of course, you know, we thought that only little kids who are bar mitzvahed become men at 13 years old. And this just shows you that, by golly, a lot of other kids were too. You are listening to Storytime, and we're going to go to Laura now and find out a little bit about the traffic and then continue on with Joe Harper.
You're listening to Pacifica Radio, KPFT Houston, and the time is coming up on 9:45. Here is a quick look at traffic and weather. There's a two-vehicle accident on the 610 East Loop southbound at Port of Houston. Two main lanes are affected. And there is slow traffic on the 610 East Loop southbound from Wallaceville to Clinton. Average speed is 17, travel time 10 and a half minutes. Current temperature is 71 degrees. Skies are clear. Humidity is 68%. And today should be partly cloudy with a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms with a high of 92. 62 and a low of 65. Please stay tuned after today's Community Spotlight for the 420 Drug War News, followed by Undercurrents at 10 o'clock, and then Wide Open Spaces at 11 o'clock. And now back to Story Time with Dr. Hank Rubicek.
Thank you. You know, before we talk about the meanings of the multiple meanings of these books, of this particular book, and what it says about the human condition, share a segment of it with us.
Well, what I need to talk about is the black bean episode,
okay,
which is so famous and is what actually brought all these people to light. Now, you know, although John C.C. was so well cared for, the rest of these men had to walk beyond Mexico City. They had to walk to Mexico City and beyond up into the mountains to Perote Castle in chains. And it seems like an incredible length and impossible thing to me, but they did it. And they were so rollicking. Somehow they kept up their spirits incredibly. But when they got to a place called Hacienda de Salado, they made a break and escaped. But they went into the mountains. There wasn't water. They weren't able to get food. Many died. And ultimately, the others were captured and taken back. And as they were going back, there was a terrible dust storm. And little Henry Whaling saw that the Mexican soldiers had been digging a deep ditch. And he said, that ditch is for us. Well, when they went in, Santa Ana ordered that they be decimated. They, in the escape, they had killed five Mexican soldiers, and he felt that this was a serious offense and should have some serious punishment. And to the Mexican mind, to all of the places that were colonized by Spain, this was a fairly routine thing to kill every 10th man. For them, it was obvious that this was more merciful than killing them all. But to the Anglos, it was gambling with human life. And the Texans couldn't believe that that was their fate. But actually, a soldier came out with a jar, one of those that's shaped kind of like a tin pin. And it had in it 159 white beans and 17 black beans, because there were 175 of them remaining. And, of course, if you drew a black bean, then you would be shot. Now, some of the men, when they drew a black bean, gave these vainglorious comments about how it was an honor to die for Texas and so forth. But many of them just cracked jokes. And they said, this is the tallest gambling scrape I was ever in. And I told you I never failed in my life to win a prize. That sort of thing. Well, little Henry Whaling, who was small and lively, as they said, full of the devil, he drew a black bean, and they said that his face remained as bright as a man's countenance ever was, and he demanded a good meal. He said that he had been hungry for a long time, and he didn't plan to starve and be shot, too. So the Mexicans honored his request, and they cooked a big pot of mutton stew and beans and gave the condemned men double rations. And most of them had no appetite, but Henry Whaling did. He ate all his with gusto and then smoked a last cigar. Now, as they had drawn the black beans, they were taken out of the line and put tied together in the death line. And they were taken to a wall. and told to kneel down. They were blindfolded and told to kneel down and face the wall. And this was horrible to the Texans. It was an insult to be shot in the back, and they begged to be allowed to face their executioners, and they weren't afraid to look death in the face.
Wow.
But they refused them, and they had to be shot in this manner. And the Mexican guns were not good. They were bad guns, hard to aim. And many of the soldiers had just been conscripted. They were just campesinos from the various farms, so they weren't great marksmen. So the men were shot, many of them, 5 or 6 times before they died. And they said that little Henry Whaling was shot 15 times and was still shouting curses at his executioners.
Understandably so. Yeah, I would.
General, out of mercy or irritation, shot him in the head to put him out of his misery.
Unbelievable. That's just captivating. And I don't say that often, but that was captivating. I hope you're enjoying storyteller / historian Joe Harper, award-winning storyteller, on KPFT's Storytime on Open Journal. I'm your host, Hank Rubicek. You have a tremendous range of stories. You know, I'm thinking about how you tell children's stories so well, and now you're teaching us Texas history through these very powerful narratives, and your range is pretty remarkable, Joe. It really is. To all our listeners, tell your range of stories or listen to others tell theirs. And there's no better place to tell, listen, and learn about storytelling than at the Houston Storytellers Guild Story Swap, held the third Thursday of every month at 6:30 at Brazos Bookstore. I think the best little bookstore in town. And tell your stories. We're at 2421 Bissonnette. And you also want to check out our website at HoustonStorytellers.org for all sorts of fun happenings like our workshops, Skyline Screamers, the Saturday before Halloween, and a lot more. I'm a very proud president of that organization, and we sure do welcome the community to join us in learning the incredible, powerful art of storytelling. Joe, I know that your book is out, and it will be out, I should say, in bookstores very, very soon. Again, it's called Mirror Men, Adventures and Sufferings of Colorful Texans on the Mirror Expedition. It's published by Aiken Press, and this was co-written with your daughter, Josephine.
Yes.
Yeah, wow. So she's a fledgling young writer, or she's done a lot of writing herself?
I've written several books with her. She's a psychotherapist, but
you'd have to be to figure out these characters. I would imagine that would be imperative.
I've been stealing lines from her since she was 4 years old. She's a wonderful help to me.
Yeah, but this really is so captivating. I'm just looking at the back of the book. I want to read this to the listeners. It's a story of a small group of Texas adventurers, the Mirror Men, who invaded Mexico, fought a battle at Ciudad Mier, surrendered, walked to Mexico City in chains, and were imprisoned in Perote Castle. Perote Castle. They had volunteered to invade Mexico because the Mexican army had captured Sam Maverick and other Texas officials. The volunteers aimed to bring them back. Their ordeal, especially having to draw beans in a lottery for their lives, has captured the imaginations of Texans throughout the years. And it certainly has captured my imagination. This was a fantastic, fantastic show. I so wish we had more time. But thank you, Joe, so very much, and the very best with this book. I have no doubt that it'll be incredibly successful, if for no other reason than this is a way to really learn Texas history. It is a great way to understand the power of history and storytelling at the same time, because you really can't separate them. You really can't, at least not in this context. History is largely human narrative, as we know, and you've given us a fascinating account of a story that we'll never forget. And so, to all of you, tell your stories, because it's never too late to live happily ever after. I'm Dr. Hank Rubicek, wishing each of you a safe and storybook-filled weekend. Thank you.
You have been listening to Open Journal, KPFT's experiment in community-inspired radio. Since 1970, KPFT has been a unique source on the Houston airwaves. Visit KPFT.org to support this station. KPFT listener members are welcome to produce an Open Journal. Prospective producers must fill out an Open Journal request form, which is available at our website. The program director welcomes your feedback on every Open Journal. Listener feedback helps KPFT determine what Open Journals are appreciated by the community at large. To get in touch with the program director, send an email to pd@kpft.org or call 713-526-4000, extension 308.